Happy Bitcoin Thursday, freaks. I know it is not Tuesday, but we are here for another Citadel Dispatch. If you've been following along on Twitter, we have this brand new studio in Bitcoin Park in Nashville. So I will be prioritizing in-person conversations going forward. That means that the Tuesday schedule every week is officially dead. We will be going with the flow. Some days you will get multiple dispatches on the same day. Some days you'll get no dispatches. I will try and keep you updated on Twitter. But if you subscribe on Twitch, twitch.tv/CitadelDispatch, or if you subscribe to the podcast feed in your favorite podcast app by searching Citadel Dispatch, you will get notified every time a new dispatch drops. Also, if you go to our chat, Citadel Chat, by going to CitadelDispatch.com and clicking that Citadel Chat button, I will obviously notify everyone whenever we're going live and keeping people updated on the schedule. But I'm really loving these in-person rips, and as a result, it's gonna be going with the flow and going with our guest schedule. With all that said, this is Citadel Dispatch 67. Citadel Dispatch is 100% audience funded without sponsors or ads. So it exists because of you guys and your generous support. So I do want to thank everyone who continues to support the show. As always, you can support the show at CitadelDispatch.com with our BTC Pay instance. We're a Bitcoin-only operation, so the only way you can contribute is with Bitcoin. You can also support the show via podcasting 2.0 apps like Fountain Podcasts and Breeze Wallet. You can just load them up with sats. They work like a regular podcast app. Load them up with sats. Choose how many sats per minute you think the show is worth. And it just streams right to my node. You also have a feature called Boosts, Boostograms, where you can choose a set amount and send it with a message. And if you do that, I will be reading the top paying boosts, the highest boosts of the previous episode, every new episode. So with that said, we have C.A. Danner. She contributed 10,000 sats. She said, thank you, Matt O'Dell, from your Satoshi white paper, artist freak, C.A. Danner. We have letter 6173, 5,555 sats. Bitcoin and Ranchers is based as fuck. Great episode. 4,000 sats from Nick, inspired. 4,000 sats from Law Bitcoin, bullish on ranch pilling. See, he doesn't like cow pilling right. Either. And then we have Chad Farrow with 3,333 sats. He did that twice, and he said Bitcoin Wednesday. Well, Chad, today is Bitcoin Thursday now. Judging by those boostograms, you can tell that our last rip was with Texas Slim himself. And we had some other great guests with us for that rip, but we have Texas Slim back here again for an update on what has been going on for the last 2 weeks. How's it going, Texas Slim?
Hey, Matt. Honored to be back here again. It's going well. I've been on the road, man. I've been driving and driving. And I asked you last night, I said, how long has it been since I was here? So I went to Knoxville, went to Chattanooga, Charlotte, Columbia, Greenville, Charleston, through the Smoky Mountains, through the Blue Ridge, doing a lot of boots on the ground work and meeting a lot of different Bitcoiners, different Bitcoin meetups, and really kind of spreading the word about, you know, the initiative basically being here in Tennessee now, you know, our second major headquarters. A lot of good noise and a lot of good signal, a lot of good feedback coming.
I love it. I love it. Slim came into town yesterday. I had him over for steaks. Slim, how did I do? Were they all right?
It's top notch. I watched your whole process and everything. You know, as far as getting the wood, it was highly impressive. And it was kind of cool because I didn't know what kind of steaks you were going to serve last night. And White Oak Pastures.
White Oak.
And you've been doing that for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, I joked with Slim when he called me. I've been waiting years for him to call me. So White Oak is on the, you know, one of the cutting edge farms that does regenerative farming.
Mm-hmm.
And they just seem like they're running a great operation.
What they're doing is they're out there in they're good. They're kind of like a good standard to look at as far as what you can do in regenerative farming and ranching, how you can regrow soil. Will Harris and his family went out there 25 years ago to Bluffton, Georgia. And if you look at Bluffton, Georgia on the map, it's about 2.5-3 hours south of Atlanta. It is out in the middle of nowhere. It's a one horse town. And once you get into White Oak Pastures itself, you can go in any direction and you can see what they've done through the last 25 years. And it's amazing the progress that can be made to regrow the soil, to steward the land, to steward the animals, to steward a community. He's preeminent right now in the United States, along with, you know, Joe Salatin and a lot of the ranchers that we're bringing into the Beef Initiative. They're doing exactly the same thing.
That's fucking awesome. Also, freaks, I don't, if you're watching the live stream, this is, I think the second ever dispatch that has video. So welcome to the new studio. Not all dispatches will have video. I'm going with the flow on that too. It's going to depend on who the guest is and whether or not they want to be on video. Some of them will be audio only still. If you are contributing in the live chat, I will be pulling it up occasionally, basically switching between the video and the live chat. So definitely continue to put your questions there and your comments. Same goes with the live chat on Twitch and Twitter. Cool. So one of the big things we wanted to talk about was these cattle deaths that have been circulating on the internet.
Yeah.
Kind of look like mass graves of cows. What's the deal with that? Is there...
Well,
what's the story?
Well, of course, you know, we're going to get all the conspiracies. We're going to get, you know, that these cattle, well, I've seen that, you know, they were killed from some space technology, you know.
Space lasers.
Is that what it was? Okay. I haven't really paid attention. Somebody brought that up and I keep on getting a lot of, you know, DMs and everything, you know, and people are kind of freaked out about it. But what I want to do and what we've done within the Beef Initiative, I mean, we have direct contact with ranchers all across the United States. And let's lose the conspiracy theories. Let's get back to a pragmatic approach to what's going on in our beef industry. And that's the best way to start. These cattle are fat cattle. That's what cattle are called before they go to harvest. These cattle were basically one step away from getting harvested, going into the kill barns. The images that were shown in the video shown, they're all stacked up nice and neat. And everybody thinks that all of a sudden, all these cattle just drop dead. And that's just, once again, a manipulation of information, of content. You see it all the time. And what it is really is a distraction for starting off. It's sad when this happens into any type of food industry in which feeds our nation and feeds the world. But one thing that people need to understand is this happens in because of elements. This happens because of the protocol that we're using right now to grow fat cattle to where they can be basically sold on a market through a feedlot system. That feedlot system is basically right now controlled by chemical companies and by four major processing companies that are global processing companies. They're not basically based in the United States. Three of the major processing companies in that harvest 85%, about 80-85% of our animal protein in the United States controls all of these feedlots. By saying that, what had happened during this time in Kansas, before that heat wave that hit the Midwest, it was around 70, 72 degrees. When you have fat cattle, what that means that are getting a mixed ration of feed. It's a mixed ration. Some call them hot feeds, cold feeds. Well, these feeds are basically designed to fatten up cattle so they can get the most money that they can. Who's making that money? The processing centers, not the ranchers. The ranchers are basically out of the picture at that point in time. These processing centers are the bottleneck to good nutrition, to healthy cows, and to healthy meat in the United States. This had nothing to do with any nefarious thing on the rancher's part or basically through the government. This was not a coordinated attack. These cattle that died, there was 10,000 of them. And what it was is about $20 million in losses.
That's insane.
It is. And if you look at the capacity of that, those numbers, you can kind of tell that, you know, factory farming is an issue in the United States. Why is it an issue? Well, because the processing centers and the packers, which are basically the same thing, have been manipulating and destroying the American rancher the last, of course, decade, but even beyond that. So let's go through what happened that day. It was 72 degrees. When you have that many fat cattle, they need shade. They need water. Well, with that type of temperature change, these, like I said, these cattle are one step away from death anyways.
Right.
So they're barely making it. And whenever you get cattle together, cattle have to cool off overnight. Usually that's what they do. And then they'll get heated back up. Well, they never had a chance to cool off from the day before. So for over 36, 48 hours, it was over 106 degrees. And so whenever you get cattle that are basically pinned up and going into harvest, you know, they're rubbing bellies. They're so close to each other that they're just overheating.
Right.
When a cow that is a fat cattle, they're close to metabolic failure already, right? Just like an obese person would be. And I look at these cattle as a reflection of our society as a whole right now, as far as our health. These cattle, basically, if they're not being farmed, harvested, and basically put on the market as American beef in the way that they are having to do right now in the United States, none of this ever happens. That's out of the control of the rancher right now. You know why that's out of control of the rancher?
Because of the processing plants?
Because of our consumer demand.
Right.
It comes down to our consumer demand being changed in a way that we're not propping up these processing centers, because all they're doing is manipulating a system that is corrupt. Tucker Carlson had an interview with one of the ranchers that was involved with this. And it was about a 15-minute interview. And what that rancher was really trying to say, and that I don't think people are understanding, is that they're being driven out of business. Our cattle industry in the United States is slowly being chipped away at in a way that the consumer does not understand. They do not understand this because of complacency and convenience. And so our consumer demand has to change as citizens of the United States. We need to demand better. We don't need to be looking at these ranchers and say the ranchers have done anything wrong. They're doing exactly what they know how to do under the basically the apparatus that has been designed by the chemical companies and the processing centers.
They're playing the game that's presented to them.
They have to.
Yeah.
And they have to basically play in a technology use agreement. They have to sign contracts. They have to cater to the USDA insurance policy. You know, I've always been at the last couple of years, I ask a lot of people, I said, where do you think the value of the cow is? This is a good example. Those 10,000 cattle that died, the value of those cow now turned into the USDA insurance policy.
Right.
Those ranchers are going to get paid, you know, because of the
loss. Do they get the full 20 mil or?
Well, they won't get the full amount. No, most of that, this will go deeper as time passes, but a lot of that will probably be given to the processing centers, not to the ranchers themselves. Let's say like JBS this last year was fined $56 million for price manipulation during COVID. Well, what the government, you know, and the current administration did not point out is that $56 million is a small little slap in the face to JBS, but JBS ended up making over $500 million worth of profit during COVID because of that same type of price manipulation. So what is the intention of the processing centers? It's to get a big fat cow that's almost metabolically dead right before they do harvest that cow.
So, I mean, let's just to pull it back for a second.
Sure.
So you have 10,000 cows die.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly $20 million worth of value.
Yes.
The pictures we see aren't where they died. They get put in place. Basically, they're insurance photos, right?
Yeah, they're insurance photos.
So when you see those pictures of all the cows with their feet up, like all next to each other, it looks like a mass grave.
Right.
That's an insurance photo for the USDA.
Pretty much.
And then the farmer, the ranchers, is submitting those photos And I assume there's some kind of inspection or something so that there's no foul play involved or something like that. They submit that to the USDA.
Mm-hmm.
And then the USDA is doing a payout, an insurance payout, but the majority is going to the processing center.
We don't know the numbers on that, but yeah, it'll be a collective type of payout to where, who, you know, the percentages involved depends on the stage of, you know, the harvesting and everything. That gets pretty in depth as far as who actually ends up getting that money. But if you look at history, the $56 million that JBS was fined, none of that went to the ranchers.
Right.
And so, you know,
but that's different. That was a fine. That's right. Not the insurance payout.
But you can kind of probably merit in the same thing as an insurance payout. You know, the ranchers are probably going to be breaking even on that cow.
So like, what would your gut say on that payout? Like, what does that look like? Is it like a 50-50? Is it 60-40?
I would have to say that the rancher gets to maintain his ranch for the next year.
So he's getting just like costs,
yeah,
or whatever.
You get even. Yeah, you get to go that 12-month cycle that we play in the fiat world, right? That's all this is anymore. That's all ranching is anymore. The ranchers are poor these days. They've lost over $200 million out of the industry itself in the last decade. And that's what the rancher was trying to say on Tucker Carlson, saying, we're losing a major percentage of American ranchers. We're losing our heritage. We're losing access to be able to provide you, the consumer, basically cattle that's not metabolically already dead before they go into harvest. That's the big message here that nobody's understanding. They're thinking that these cows got killed by lasers. No, it's because of the system and the apparatus.
Well, it's way more catchy.
Well, of course it is. We live in that clown world.
Satellite, you know? Cattle kill, you know.
It is.
It's just, that sounds like a horrible movie that a lot of people would watch.
Well, in these days and times, that's what people want. You know, they enjoy the fear porn. They enjoy everything. You know, they like to parrot the daily news. And so that cycle, it takes maybe taking a step back and looking at basically the industry that's actually feeding us.
Right. I mean, I think it's interesting because, so, I mean, Dispatch, this show is primarily focused on Bitcoin and freedom tech. It's mostly a tech show.
Right.
I think everything is all very interconnected. I mean, obviously, when I first conceived of the show, the idea was, you know, a broadcast from my citadel to your citadel or whatever. So it could really, I like to think that this format is broader than just tech. Because all of this is relevant. Obviously, we need to feed ourselves. This is all sovereign. It's all part of the sovereign stack.
Right.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned consumer demand basically being the source of all of this. Like everything else is a symptom of what consumers are going out and basically voting with their wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned this thing, convenience. It comes down to convenience. And that's what we see when all the tech conversations we have about privacy, about sovereignty, it's always a convenience versus sovereignty trade-off. It's always a convenience versus privacy trade-off. And it's the same exact case here, right?
It is. It really is. And I think a lot of it, once again, I always say that there's no judgment going on here. You know, we're all guilty, right?
Right.
We're all complacent in certain aspects of our life, and we do search for that convenience. It's what we've all been conditioned to do when we're thinking, hey, we're advancing our society because of this convenience model that we've created. Well, it's starting to show some cracks in that yearning for that convenience and that complacency. And if people need to start, you know, this is a tech show. Well, the tech that we're looking at within the Bitcoin space, it touches every aspect of our life. And if we're not starting to look at the correlation of tech in our food right now with how we can improve and how we can actually change our perception of the value of that convenience that causes this complacency, then it takes us a step back. We get into more of a low time preference thinking when it comes to our consumption of food, our consumption of audio, video. We are able to basically understand why we desire what we desire. And within Bitcoin tech, within the food industry itself, within animal protein, if we can start really correlating those and how valuable they are, that symbiotic nature of Bitcoin and food, then we're going to understand that we've gone a little too far down this complacency model and the convenience model.
Right. So, I mean, I think, first of all, freaks, like, if you haven't listened to last week, I don't know, when did That's we record those?
I was on the road for two weeks already.
Slim was on the road for 2 weeks, and I didn't give you guys a dispatch until he came back. if you haven't listened to that one, go back and listen to that one, because I think we talked a lot about actionable things that people can do to basically improve that situation. And I think there's a ton of parallels with other things we discuss on Dispatch. But one of the big ones for me that I always try and harp on is don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Small improvements do help. And this wouldn't be a conversation with Slim if we didn't say shake your rancher's hand. So those are the two main takeaways. So, I mean, let's transition a little bit to more positive topics.
Sure.
So yesterday, your boy Cole had a big announcement. Should we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about Cole, K&C Cattle. He basically supplies all of our beef through the Beef Initiative. We have a good, strong partnership with Cole. He was one of the first ranchers, top three ranchers that I reached out to, and we've developed a really good business model. And we've known for a while what Cole's plans were for the future. Well, yesterday he came out and announced that his processing center down there in Luling, Texas, south of Austin, will be opening up within the, you know, next 60 days. What does that mean? What does that mean for Bitcoiners? What does that mean for people wanting true market access to healthy cattle that aren't metabolically bankrupt? Well, it's a regenerative model. In the last dispatch, we talked about the vertical integration back into, you know, into cattle itself, into beef and everything. Well, this is basically the first major step that we are able to take moving forward. We're about to up our volume about tenfold. We're in control of the soil, the grass, the cow, the producer, and now the processor. We don't have to be under the umbrella or the thumbprint of the processing centers or the chemical companies. The processing center is a clean facility, zero chemicals. The cattle, zero chemicals, zero GMO grains, zero anything, zero, you know, steroids, all the type of stuff that you hear that get injected in these cattle. So what we've done is we have a working model now that we can start feeding the nation again within the Beef Initiative. And it's by developing this strong relationship with Cole that he was a small regenerative farmer and rancher down in Texas. Well, we're about to step it up. And we're about to basically change the game in ways that I don't think that people understand. But one thing that they can understand is the lifestyle that you can have. You don't have to worry about those cattle that are dying. You don't have to worry about that saran wrap beef in your supermarket anymore. If you're going to be intentional about your consumption within beef, there's a vertical integration that we can do on our own. You can pay in fiat, you can pay in Bitcoin. And so here we go. We're off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a massive deal. This has been a long time coming.
It has.
It seems, I've just kind of dove into this world headfirst. Like the processing center is the major bottleneck.
It is.
That's 100%. Been the major issue. And it's a big hurdle to actually have your own processing center, right? You have to go through all these different regulatory bodies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of upfront cost. So now you have like basically a parallel channel that ideologically aligned folks control.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to the recent cattle deaths, these 10,000 cows that died. Does the processes that this plant is going to be doing avoid that fate? Like, are you still going to have fat cows rubbing against each other?
Never.
That are like zombie cows that are about to die?
No, never. These cows are basically brought off the grass and they go to harvest. They're stress-free. If a cow gets stressed, right, this is a little education here. If a cow gets stressed right up until harvest,
right,
you know, it releases all kinds of stressors throughout the muscle tissue, throughout the flesh itself. And so that beef is going to be kind of destroyed. And that's something people don't understand in the regenerative movement. And especially with the processing center that, you know, Cole is kind of pioneering forward with. Those cows, if they get stressed during right before they get harvested, they just get taken out. they get to live another day. You know, it's a streamlined process that is stress-free, and they're not going to be in 110 degree heat, 106 degree heat for 24 hours. No,
right.
they're going to be shaded. They're going to have plenty of water. They're not going to be running, rubbing belly to belly. That's that high volume. Let's look at that. 10,000 cattle. We process 600,000 cattle a month in the United States. Okay, the micro processing, the micro avatar that we're moving forward with in the beef initiative, we're not even competing with those guys. What we're doing is we're doing something that's very inclusive and exclusive for the intentional consumer, somebody that wants to be educated, somebody that wants to know exactly where their protein's coming from, and they want to make sure that those cattle are raised and then harvested in a very, very humane way. The type of cattle that, you know, Cole Bolton, Jason Rick, Justin Tram, all the different ranchers we have, they have some of the best lives that you could ever hope for a cattle. They're not rushed into a processing center because that kill date is set by a processing center saying when that cow is a calf, you have to process it on August 1st, 18 months away from here. Where is the intention of that? Well,
right.
As a rancher, you lose all of that basically sovereignty of being a rancher. And all you're doing is the means to an end is to hit that date. You don't know if that cow's going to be ready for that harvest, but right. You have to harvest it so you can turn that small margin back into it. So with what Cole is doing, he's taking away all the power of these major processing centers. And by doing that, guess what? We can change our consumer demand into this model in which Cole Bolton is basically pioneering. That's huge.
So you're like taking the power, and it's kind of ironic because, I mean, he's opening a processing center, but you're taking the power from the large, I guess, the big four processing centers, mm-hmm. and you're giving it back to the rancher.
100%. That's it right there. And that's what people need to really focus on anymore with the distractions, with the conspiracies. Okay, this conspiracy is in the processing centers.
Right. There is a conspiracy.
It's just You're damn right. They're stealing.
There's just not ninja assassins going to kill
right.
cows.
It's the apparatus in which they have to function. And we, as a consumer, are okay with it because of lack of education, some complacency, and the yearning for convenience.
Right.
We don't have to basically play that game anymore. So if you're really, you know, focused and it does matter to you, then you can say, I'm not going to pay attention anymore. I'm going to go ahead and develop my own market access. I'm going to become my own food supply chain line. I'm going to develop my own food security by going to this vertical integration in which what we've done in the beef initiative.
Fuck yeah.
And what you hear though, on a lot of things, and a lot of people look at this, see, the processing centers, they control market access, right? What does right. that mean? Okay, a processing center is also the packager. Okay, they package. Okay, so after the cow's processed, they package that beef. Well, that beef and that distribution of that beef is controlled by the processing centers. They are the distribution model as well. So they're the ones that have all the contracts with the major supermarkets and everything from the Walmarts to the Krogers to the HEBs of the world. And whenever they have the control of that market access to those coolers in the supermarkets, the small independent rancher does have no access to this and they never will.
Right.
What we have to do is say, well, we don't buy beef from the supermarket anymore. We don't have to because we have a relationship with these ranchers. We went out shaking their hand in person, or we've shaken their hand digitally through the beef initiative.
Right.
And once people can start thinking like that, they see a shift in their lifestyle and they start understanding food intelligence a little bit more that I started off with in the very beginning.
Right. The key is to cut out, there's two bottlenecks, right? There's mm-hmm. the processing centers and the supermarkets.
Yep.
And then the processing centers also control the supermarket bottleneck, basically.
100%.
So you cut out both. You have like a proper circular economy.
Yep.
And you have a processor that is pro-rancher processor, basically.
100%. It's back in, as I said from the very beginning, man, let's go start living like my grandfather lived.
It's funny because like usually, at least in the Bitcoin world, you try and look for at least an attempt at decentralization. In this case, that's almost not it's like pure decentralization is not really possible because you need the processing center.
Mm-hmm.
So the alternative is like, okay, so we'll do a vertical integration that is parallel to the current system that ideally has better incentives.
100%.
Right.
You're not going to break these four, you know, we'll see what the government does with legislation,
right,
the representatives, the Congress, the Senate and everything. But let's go back to JBS real quick. JBS, you know, the fines and everything. Well, their founder of JBS, they're in Brazil. Well, he went to prison for 2 years for bribing the Brazilian presidency, right?
Right.
Well, that same bribing team, as I like to call it, were also caught bribing in the United States. All of that always gets covered up. All of it gets swept under the rug. And the general public never gets to hear any of that information. Well, if that's the damn case, well, you guys go play that game. We're playing a different game over here. And we're following the law better than the law follows itself. And we are setting precedents that is driven by a new consumer demand. And if we can take that sovereign responsibility as consumers and people that are educated and want the best health that we can get, then we do create that parallel economy, parallel food sourcing that, once again, that our grandparents, that's how we got here.
Makes sense to me. Huge shout out to Cole for...
Yeah, congratulations,
stepping Cole out on a limb here, right? I mean, that's got to be a massive... massive undertaking.
It really is.
What did you say? Like, it's going to process what 1,200 cattle? How often?
That'll be about 1,200 cattle starting off.
That's per year? Is that a per year number?
Year, but you know that can scale. I'll just say that. But it will never scale up to where we're you know getting out of control with that with the numbers game. It's not a numbers game. It's a quality game now. And that's where we're changing the perception. It's like, it doesn't have to be 600,000 cattle a month in the United States. What it has to be a quality game that's intentional to where we don't have to play that numbers game anymore. We're bringing quality back into our beef.
I love it. Freaks, I hear you in the live chat. First of all, I know the Matrix chat is not up on the screen. I do have the Twitch chat up on the screen, which is different than usual. I have to like figure out how I'm going to display the Matrix chat and the video at the same time. We're kind of just winging it. I also hear you that the camera, you don't like how the camera is aligned. Well, I don't have a producer. I literally have this like thing over here that I'm controlling the sound. I have a camera over here that I plugged in ahead of time. So I will take that feedback going forward. If you do want to see Dispatch have a producer, and better cameras, you know, feel free to support the show. It is appreciated. But we will be iterating on this and slowly improving. So I thank you for standing with me, as this, show slowly and steadily improves. But it will be a little bit of a process. And huge thanks to Slim for being here, for that process as well. I hope the audio quality is fantastic. I think we've improved that tremendously, which is, to me, was the lowest hanging fruit. So, good for that. What else you want to talk about, Slim?
Let's talk about the Beef Initiative. Let's talk about Tennessee, but let's first talk about our second conference.
Okay.
Let's talk
Colorado.
About Colorado Beef Initiative Conference. That's July 22nd and 24th.
So it's basically exactly a month from now.
Exactly a month. And it's a 3-day conference. It's Friday afternoon, Saturday day, and Sunday. There's going to be options in there moving forward of different days that you might be able to attend, because we know it's a destination spot. This is kind of how I work. These conferences, I don't want them to be convenient right now.
You got to show some proof of work.
Hell yeah. I mean, this is what this is about. I've told everybody from the very beginning, this is a lifestyle change.
So where is it in Colorado?
It's in the North Fork Valley of Colorado.
Can vehicles get there, or do you have to ride a horse?
No, you can bring your horse if you want. But what it is, it's in the North Fork Valley. It's Crawford, Colorado, Paonia, Colorado, Hotchkiss. It's out by Needle Rock. It's a beautiful part of the country that a lot of people don't get to see a lot. You know, Jason Rick of Rick Ranches, he basically, his smaller ranch is 400 acres right there. But also what he's doing, he stewards.
His small 400 acre ranch?
Yeah, his small 400 acre ranch.
I would love a small 400 acre
ranch. Wouldn't we all, right? That's what I've been looking for out in the hills of Tennessee. But what he does, he takes care of and he stewards 4,000 acres. And so that whole valley, he's got cattle all over that valley.
That's awesome.
And it's absolutely beautiful. And if you go to the website, of course, beefinish.com, you'll see a picture that we're using for that conference. That's his daily life. And so...
Is that the one with the horse butts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that picture.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it's got Needle Rock there too.
So is that, so it's going to be held at his ranch? Is that the plan?
Yeah, it's definitely interactive, hands-on, regenerative farming and ranching education.
That's awesome.
We're going to have Jason Rick of Rick Ranches. We're going to have Weldon Warren. He's out of Holy Cow. He's out of Lubbock, Texas, outside of Lubbock, Texas, West Texas, kind of where I come from. Weldon's been doing a lot what Will Harris has been doing the last 20 years, and he's been doing it in the desert high plains as far as regenerative farming and ranching. I mean, you want to talk about proof of work and changing his life, because his family kind of suffered from metabolic health problems, and then he went deep down into the soil and started really understanding how to steward animals to improve his health. And so he's highly successful. Him and his wife, Ann Warren, have been doing this, like I said, for 20 years. And then we've got Scott Hawk of Colorado as well. He's a first generational regenerative farmer and rancher. And Sacred Songs Farms, they're on Twitter. You can look him up. Scott's going to be speaking there. We're going to have Katie the Russian, Amy AK-47. They're going to be talking about, you know, nutrition. They're caught in newborns. They're going to be talking about unschooling. We're going to have a lot of...
I hate the term unschooling.
That's what the people keep telling me, though. Yeah. It's like unschooling. What would you call it?
Cow pilling. No, I don't know. I mean, I like...
Reschooling? I don't know what it is. What we can come up with a term.
Like a more positive term. I don't... Usually when a term is the reverse of something... Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a response. It's not an active thing, because it's something that with my future children, that's what I want to do. Like, I don't want to put them through the traditional school system.
Sure.
But also I don't want to call it unschooling. Like, I feel like that's the meaning to the movement.
I like that. One thing that's important, Ann Warren, Weldon's wife, they homeschooled all of their children. And now they're homeschooling all their grandchildren.
Right.
You see this lifestyle starting to play out.
I think homeschooling is a better term.
We'll just use homeschooling. We won't use
But I feel like we can jazz it up.
Yeah. You know? We'll have
Because homeschooling has like a different negative connotation, but that's just because of like years of propaganda.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I won't use that other P word either. So. But if you look at, you know.
So is there going to be any Bitcoin content, or is it?
Yes, we're going to have
Because we have nutrition content. There. We have ranching content. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have Econo Alchemist.
I love that dude.
He's freaking top notch, man. Me and Econo have been talking for about a year now.
Shout out to Eco.
Yeah,
Eco. He's got a wonderful family. It's real family.
And he lives out there in Colorado, man. It's in his, you know, I don't know exactly where he lives. Don't want to dox his location, but, you know, he's doing it right. I mean, he's really creating that lifestyle. We're going to have mining talk. We're going to have privacy talk of Bitcoin. We're going to have, you know, education of the rancher, basically, and the rancher educating us. And we're not going to use cow pilling. So
we're ranch pilling.
Yes, we're ranch pilling. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to end up, people are going to start seeing is that this, you brought it up 2 weeks ago about how all of this is kind of balanced out as far as the rancher really ranch pilling us.
It's true value for value.
It really is.
Neighbors helping neighbors.
It's so balanced that it once both sides of this coin start talking, it just flows. And that's what these conferences do. We're going to have tons of Bitcoin education, tons of soil education. People want to get into regenerative farming and ranching. You will leave that conference and you'll have a call to action. And you'll have a game plan. And you're going to meet people that are being successful right now from the last 20 years to the last 7 years to the last couple of years. So that's you'll awesome. See that roadmap. Anything that you want to learn at that conference, because it's going to be very interactive and you're going to be able to see the valley. We're going to have, every day we're cooking everything from Rick Ranches, all the food. We're going to have Gourmet Caveman. Look him up on Twitter. It's Gourmet Caveman.
Is that a brand or a person?
It's a person. That's Michael.
Awesome. And great name.
It is. And he is top notch, man. He's like 5-star, but he focuses on fire and beef now. So, I mean, whenever I was in Tennessee, I was up in 10 Mile. I stopped off at Charles Mayfield's place with Farrell, the skin product that he's making out of lard.
Right.
So we had a big cook out there and out there in 10 Mile. He's exciting. I mean, how he approaches, you know, preparing and, you know, he's going to be showing off a lot of different recipes, how to prepare beef. So we're bringing all this education into one spot there in Colorado. It's a destination spot. It's like a big family gathering. We have camping sites that you can use that we've already reserved.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So you want to camp out. I mean, I think Katie and Amy, they were talking about getting an RV in Denver, flying into Denver, renting an RV and then staying at the campsite in their RV.
So and with the drive to Denver there is like 2.5?
About 2.5, yeah.
It's not horrible.
No, it's you go over the mountain range,
right.
You know, and it's not that difficult.
A very pretty drive, I presume.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Colorado is one of the most beautiful states in the country.
Why wouldn't you want to be there in July? I mean, that's right. A summer vacation. And if, you know, we look at right now with inflation, you know, with the Bitcoin volatility, whatever you want to call it, yeah, maybe so, but it's a destination spot that you really should kind of mark on your calendar because we're not, you know, these conferences aren't big, you know.
How many people are you expecting?
We usually do about 100 is what I target.
What is the capacity? And what's your max?
100.
100.
That's all I'm going to do.
So once you hit the 100, no one can get in.
No. No.
FOMO.
Yep.
FOMO freaks. So if people want more information, they want to buy, that's beefinitiative.com. Is where they get tickets.
Yep, you bet. You can go there and you can look at, you know, if you really want to discover what the Beef Initiative, that we keep the website pretty much up to date. So there's tons of educational information. You know, you want to buy your beef box, everything's right there. So go share it around.
I really like the idea of these small, intimate events. I think there's a lot of momentum to them right now.
I think so. I think, you know, moving forward, we're going to have more of these conferences. We're going to try to have 4 total. I've definitely 3 on the books that we've looked at and targeted right now. We're going to have one at White Oak Pastures,
right,
in September in Georgia with Will Harris and everything. But right now, the definite focus is on Colorado. And why I want them more intimate. Once we get to where the demand is hitting so high, we can start live streaming these globally and make everybody understand that the Beef Initiative is a global event. It's a global movement. I've got people from Australia, from Africa, from Europe, from Asia coming on board, from the Middle East that are reaching out saying, how can we be part of the Beef Initiative? Once we get to where this signal and this narrative is kind of being spread globally, let's live stream every one of these to where everybody has access and they can take away from these events something that they can use locally.
That reminds me, and it's a trend with both me and Marty that we like to talk business on air, but I got to get you a BitcoinTV.com channel still.
Yes, yes.
And we got to make sure that happens.
We need to because as I've been on the road, the people that are helping out, I mean, we're like you. I mean, we don't have a lot. Yeah. We have a small team of volunteers that have been fantastic.
I love that. Yeah.
You know, once again, self-funded here, man. We don't have any stupid VC money or anything like that within the Beef Niche. We can't. You and I talked about that last
night.
Right,
incentives.
It is. We have to be grassroots right now. And by saying that, we're podcasting 2.0. Adam Curry's got us all transitioned over. So
I love podcasting 2.0.
It's amazing. Once you get into that and you start making that transformation in, it, you know, just all the things that you can do. It's just, we're trying to develop a model that we can kind of give to everybody else, say, hey, this is, if you got a podcast, this is how you use it. This is how you transform into it.
That reminds me, actually, the great team over at Fountain just released an update. We were just talking about incentives that if you listen through Fountain, you can actually earn sats as you listen. So not only can you use Fountain or Breeze or another podcasting 2.0 app to support the shows you like and support the content you like directly without a middleman, which truly aligns incentives because instead of working for your sponsors, you're working for your audience. Those people can also earn by listening, which I think is a very strong incentive and should get a lot more people into the podcasting 2.0 ecosystem to begin with.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. I was reading
really
that
big update that between that update and offline listening, because I'm a big offline podcast guy. Like I like to have them downloaded on my phone. You're on the road or something. You don't want to be like, oh, am I you're like right in the middle of a good conversation and just like fucking cuts.
Yeah.
So like the offline listening and this earning sats for listening is, two big things. The Boostergrams is massive. I think it's really cool that people can send their support along with a message. So we have this question from Disco Toshi. Is there a way to incentivize commercial meat buyers, i.e. major grocery outlets, to not purchase meat through the big four and move towards regenerative farming product? Is changing consumer behavior the only way to get outlets that supply meat in mass to change? The current supply chain landscape seems like they will always choose quantity over quality because margins trump everything.
Right now, the only answer is to do the vertical integration through different types of, it doesn't have to be like a Coles processing center. There's Jason in Colorado. He has access through a processing center that is clean. You know, you hear me say that.
Right.
That's the only way we're going to step into this.
I mean, I think White Oak is available in grocery stores.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He sells through, he was the first actually grass fed beef ever sold through Whole Foods.
So, but did he circumvent the major four?
He did by opening up his own processing.
And then he went straight to Whole Foods and was like, carry my product.
Yes.
So, I mean, you were talking last night over steaks, that basically grocery stores are shit coins. Like we should just not even.
Yeah, they are. It's cartoon world, man.
It's not even worth fighting that fight, really.
No. Why would we? They're not going to stop. I mean, look at our consumption. I mean, you walk those, you hear it all the time, middle aisles of a grocery store.
Right.
How much garbage is in that? Why do we want to participate in that? Well, especially the Bitcoiners. Why are we even participating in that clown world anymore when we have other options? We're pioneering into a different direction. We don't have to ask permission. We don't have to be dependent on them saying, yeah, we might give you market access into our shelf space, into our grocery store, our supermarket. And you look, I was talking yesterday, when was the supermarket really ramped up?
1971. It's like, that was just a guess, but you know, it's like when you're answering a quiz, you go with C. If you don't know what the answer is, well, you just go with 1971. If someone asks you what year something happened.
But it's a good question, but let's not even ask that question anymore. Let's create our own market access.
I mean, there's another thing you mentioned. I'm not sure if it was on air, the last rip, or if it was just off the record. Mm-hmm. Basically like the degradation of farmer market culture around the country.
Sure.
So I guess that goes partially in it, right? Like you circumvent the grocery stores, the supermarkets. You try and do direct to consumer as well. Mm-hmm. You try and partner with places like Bitcoin Park here where we can have, you know, essentially ranchers come in, sell their product directly to consumers, maybe like a once a month type of thing. They come in with their product, people come in to buy it. But also there's got to be, that's a component too, like revitalizing the farmers market, right?
Yeah.
And getting people in the rhythm that like every week they're able to just circumvent the grocery store and they're able to go directly to local producers.
100%. I mean, the degradation of the farmers market, I mean, I don't think a lot of people now these days in 2022 even know truly where the farmers market came from. You know, it was on the county square. Everybody came on the weekend and, you know, they'd grown their small crops or whatever, and they came in and they fed the communities. Now you go to these farmers markets and basically they're craft shows.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's interesting because if we don't get back to the understanding the source of the seed of the farmers market, then the farmers markets are useless. And how do these change? How does it change? How do we transform back into what a true farmer's market is? What is it? It goes back to consumer demand. And if we start demanding every time as Bitcoiners, because we have to demand everything that we do these days because people aren't listening or they're uneducated. But if we start asking the right questions, then that's how we create this new demand of bringing back a farmer's market. And we're giving these producers confidence to start attending these farmers markets again because we want to use them and we want them to leverage us and we want to leverage them because we have that symbiotic relationship saying we're here to help you, you're here to educate us, and we're going to help each other.
So, I mean, I guess like a pretty actionable thing that people out there can do is seek out existing farmers markets that already exist.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally find one that is maybe already in the right direction, but I guess you go there and you try and support local producers that seem to be doing the right thing and have conversations and shake their hand, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's that's probably a very actionable thing that actually would result in positive change, I think.
I think it is. I mean, you guys have gone to farmers markets around here out.
Right. I went to one that was like a half an hour away.
Right.
And I mean, I didn't do like intense research, but I was talking to a bunch of farmers there that seemed like they had really good product and that their hearts were in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine like not only just, purchasing from them, like having a conversation with them is like, oh, we're on the right track. Like there's people out there that actually still care.
They really do. And that's the best way, you know, we've had this conversation before is like, how do you orange pill, you know, a rancher? You know, I always tell everybody, of course, you go up and you shake their hand, you look at them in the eye and you ask them, would you educate me and tell me why you do what you do? And by doing that, most of these regenerative farmers and ranchers or just ranchers in general, number one, they're educators. They want people to understand what they do every day. Once you show them that type of respect and you ask the right questions, you're not soliciting anything. You're really yearning to be educated on where and why and what the food is that they steward for us. By showing that type of respect, you're asking the right questions. And we have to learn to ask the right questions when it comes to our food anymore. We don't ask the right questions. We're not asking we're not truly wanting to know why those cattle died. The reason they died is because of the apparatus that they're under. Okay, whenever you're going to these farmers markets and you go in there and you're somewhat educated, you understand their pain points as them being producers, you can really show that respect and start asking the right questions. If we ask the right questions, we're going to build a dialogue that transforms into a new vertical integration in how we look at food.
I love it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. So Slim, we're at 52 minutes. I was just reading
already.
Comment. Yeah, and I mean, I have a rabbit hole recap in an hour and 15. Also going to be from the studio. So is there anything else you want to discuss before we wrap this up? But should we talk a little bit about the work on the Tennessee Beef Initiative you've done over the last 2 weeks?
Or? Yeah. I left Texas at the end of May, and here we are. What's today? 23rd, 24th, something like that of June?
What's the 23rd?
23rd. So 24 days. This jaunt, overall, it's over 6,000 miles. This jaunt that I just went out on was over 3,000 something miles. And a lot of people don't understand what I'm doing. I want everybody to understand the importance of getting out of the interstate mindset.
Right.
There's a lot of this country that's being stolen out from underneath us in many ways. Perceptions is one. The amount of opportunity that's out here in the United States that people are wanting to have this lifestyle change. The amount of people that I've seen and talked to on this trip within this tour is that there's a disconnect going on in this country. We think that we have a lot of access to information right now. We don't. We're in a small index of a Google index these days. People have to let that shit go, man. They have to start looking in a broader sense of a lifestyle change, and it starts with creating relationships with people that are trying to feed us. If you can make that kind of a yearning for yourself as a strong, sovereign individual, then you're going to get off the damn interstate of this censorship, of the lack of information that we have right now going on. Once you do something like I've just done, traveling through all these states, all these miles, all the backcountry roads, you're going to end up finding out that it's not as bad as you think, but there's some alarming things going on as well. Let's work together as a Bitcoin community. We're the pioneers here. Nobody else is going to pioneer through this. We need to punch through, and we need to start with lifestyle, with lead with food, and sound money. And that's what, if we can do that collectively, we can create and build this movement into a bigger signal and narrative to where we are the distraction. Those 10,000 cattle that died don't need to be the distraction anymore. We need to become the distraction.
I mean, that's an interesting, that I just to pull it back a tiny bit. I mean, that was an interesting comment you made, that people think we have access to all this information, but we don't, but we do kind of, there's just so much information.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, I guess it's just the human condition. They bring themselves into this little bubble. It's like a self-selected bubble.
It is. And it's, you know, that's algorithms. That's, you know, Google itself. I mean, Google's a joke. I mean, it's good for, you know, but there's mapping also like here.
There's this element, right? That it's okay. So we have the world's information at our fingertips. You have the most content available that anyone has ever had in human history.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the human to human interactions are probably at like an all time low. Like if you go back 30 years, the amount of people they would have a conversation with, like looking them in the eyes and having a real conversation with, was probably significantly higher than today, because people have like this comfort blanket of the phone or the computer or the screen to hide behind, right?
There's a division of interpersonal communication going on in the United States and humanity right now. And it's dangerous because we've lost touch with each other on a personal level. And it is something that is rampant, and it's something that people don't want to admit. And people really, they're having a hard time connecting with each other. And all I can say is, Sal was right. We were talking about handshakes last night, right? And how truly important that is to have that human contact with each other. We need to really strive to get back to that. And it adds value to your life. It's basically the lifestyle that everybody's yearning for. They just don't know that they're yearning for it in this way. If we can kind of create a new pathway to that interpersonal connection, then people's lives do get better.
Yeah, I mean, I think I relate to that significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and practice what I preach. So, you know, part of the reason why my priorities now are, we're taking such a huge gamble on Bitcoin Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, I already have all these friends I've made online. I already have this audience online. I have this platform online. But ultimately, to have a place where people can meet in person and have in-person relationships is so powerful. Even if the scope of the amount of people that might see or be a part of those conversations is decreased, the quality of the conversation is so much better. And I think, I mean, hopefully the gamble pays off. But I think there's like this nice little middle ground. There's this combination, right? Where you have places for people to come together in person, and then also places where this place is also a place where you're able to produce content that has a global reach. And there's a lot of similarities there to basically the Colorado event and what you view Beef Initiative for, right? Where you have, 100 people in person having high signal, real conversations. And then you also have globally produced content that goes out from those same locations.
Well, that's a fantastic point. I think it was Rod saying, you know, hyper localized, broadcast globally. I can't remember the true phrase he said.
Locally produced, globally distributed.
There you go.
That's his shake your rancher's hand. Right. Like, he never shuts up about that.
Well, let's look at that. I mean, look at Nashville at Bitcoin Park.
Right.
Okay. What's our next steps with the Tennessee Beef Initiative?
Right.
Well, it's going to be Bitcoin Park, right?
Right.
What are we going to do? We're going to bring a rancher in here. We're going to adopt him.
Yes.
And he's going to come. We're going to have our own damn farmer's market.
And he's going to adopt us, hopefully.
There you go.
We'll adopt each other.
Exactly. It'll be symbiotic. It'll be that balance that we refer to. We don't have to ask for permission. Well, why is that so valuable? Because it's the quality of the relationship that we're building.
Right.
And people will yearn to come to Bitcoin Park once a month to buy their beef or their clean produce, whatever it is, right? And once we get that going, guess what happens across the nation with all these Bitcoin meetups in the different headquarters? They start doing the same thing.
Exactly.
And once you get it going, once you get it flowing, a lot of risk. I mean, you know, Bitcoin Park is a risk, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's dollars and cents.
At some point, you gotta just go for it, right?
You have to go through it and you just innovate. You don't have to ask for permission anymore. Bitcoiners don't ask for permission.
Right.
And so once we get that kind of signal going and we show proof of work and we show the successes and the failures and the iterations that we have to go through, I guarantee we get one Tennessee rancher here in Bitcoin Park and Bitcoiners are buying the beef from him. he's set for the next 5 to 10 years. We're talking about true innovation of pure animal protein again, that which we lost the last 50 years since a supermarket that was created in 1971 that's been exacerbated by these four global processing and packaging centers. And that's how we do this.
I mean, it's definitely, it's a little bit tangential, but I can't stop and I won't stop. So, you know, one of the things that we are doing at Bitcoin Park is for whatever reason, the previous tenants had a coffee shop here. So we have a coffee shop already. And we brought in, we haven't had a rancher here yet, but we had this farm to cup Guatemalan producer of coffee, and she came in with her husband, and you know, their eyes lit up. They were like, this is exactly what we've been looking for, a way to connect these farmers in Guatemala directly to consumers and cut out all the middlemen in between. And I like to think that when we start to get ranchers here, it's going to be a similar situation.
It'll flow like water. It'll be so natural. And you think about, you know, you come here and for the coffee, right? Partnerships with Ibex, partnerships right. with Oshi. You know, look at all these partnerships that are starting to happen to where people, they don't want to go anywhere else. And if right. they know that it's happening and they feel wanted and connected, then once again, here we go, man. It's an international lifestyle that you've been yearning for.
And like the crazy thing is when we were talking to them, they were making us coffee and stuff. We were just talking about like coffee and farming and stuff. They're not Bitcoiners.
Right.
They're not Bitcoiners yet.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be about Bitcoin.
And Bitcoin never came up, except that they'll accept payment in Bitcoin, but they can take dollars if they want.
Sure. Yeah. And that's what I always tell people. Don't start the conversation about Bitcoin. Get educated first. See where they are. You know, they're from Guatemala. You know, learn about Guatemalan coffee, how they raise those coffee beans. Everything about that, you need to educate yourself so you can speak towards it.
Well, yeah, it shows you what a global movement it is, by the way, because Ibex is a Guatemalan company.
It is.
So we were like, you can accept Bitcoin with this Guatemalan company that has market access in the United States, and you can get dollars in your bank account if you don't want Bitcoin. And it all kind of comes full circle.
It's starting to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's starting to really unfold pretty quickly. And, you know, everything like the tickets for the conferences, you know, you can pay right. in Bitcoin or, you know, whatever. We use all this technology already with our beef. You know, I've told everybody we've had over $100,000 worth of beef sold through the Beef Initiative, you know, through Bitcoin. And so it's happening. And if you think that you need to wait anymore to adopt this transformation into everything that we've been talking about, and you especially been since you're such an old school guy, you know, you see it too and you feel it. And I think it's our responsibility to bring these other people in. And it's not about telling them they have to start accepting Bitcoin. It's just saying, hey, we want you to be involved with us.
Exactly.
And let it happen holistically and naturally.
So we have Gwet Vox in the comments. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And he supports three local producers in SoCal,
mm-hmm.
Southern California. And he wants to know, how does he kickstart some kind of Bitcoin beef initiative in Southern California? And I guess if people are asking from anywhere in the country,
sure,
they want to try and start something in their area. What's their steps? What should they do?
The first step is basically right now we're at the point where you can still contact me and we can have a conversation. I love scheduling meetings with people like that. The three local producers, especially in Southern California right now, they need our help in California. So let's coordinate and reach out to me, DM me on, Twitter, or you can email, of course, to textxslim@beefinitiative.com. Most important thing for everybody to hear, there's a protocol that's going on with people coming into the Beef Initiative. Every producer that gets added to the Beef Initiative right now, it's crowdsourced. It's because it already has proof of work. So Bitcoiners and producers are starting to see that the value add of getting into the producer section of the Beef Initiative, it's beefinitiative.com/producer. Once they're in there, people start calling them, people start contacting them, they start being educated, they start reaching out to them more. once they've established that themselves in that producer section, then we can start really looking at what are their pain points. Let's start working together. Let's coordinate with me. And we start developing a plan, you know, regionally, geographically, demographically, everything. We look at, you know, what they've got going on. And just like with Ryan in Missouri, you know, he's doing something different than, you know, Justin is doing in the Panhandle,
right,
that Jason's doing in Colorado, Cole's doing in Southern Texas, Central Texas. So, you know, let's coordinate. Let's start building these nodes across the United States. It starts with a, you know, a quick conversation and some collaboration.
I love it. By the way, we pronounced his name Get Fox. He's telling me in the comments.
Okay, Get Fox.
He's going to reach out to you.
Perfect.
Well, Slim, it's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure kicking it with you on and off the air. You have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
You know, I hope you can come to the conference in Colorado.
I will say 90%. 90%.
Well,
to you and the freaks, 90%.
That'll work for me. I won't push you anymore right there.
And but we'll know in the next couple of days.
Once we know
just
that
had
in
some things
days,
move around. So.
Yeah, transfer those dates around so you can be in Colorado. And
I would say I would absolutely love to be there. And if I'm not there, I'm going to have massive FOMO. So,
well, let's make everybody have some FOMO right now. I mean, this is what this is about. Let's not be fragile these days.
Fuck yeah.
Let's step this shit up, man. Let's really get serious about this. And, you know, how many relationships and friendships that I've established this last year is just priceless. Let's keep this going. Everybody can participate. You don't have to ask for permission. This is for everybody. We're open source, we're crowdsourced, man. Let's do this movement. Let's not just watch the number and expect number go up. How we make it is that we start really collaborating together and we start bringing in all of this intelligence, all this education, this humility, as you say. Stay humble. Let's stack some sats and let's stack some protein.
Well, that's a great sign off. I want to thank you again, Slim.
Thanks.
I want to thank all the freaks who continue to listen and support the show. Reminder, the show is completely audience funded by you guys, and I really do appreciate your support. Easiest way to do is podcasting 2.0 apps or going to citadeldispatch.com. If you send boostergrams, I will read them for the next episode. I don't know when that... Oh, I think our next dispatch is going to be on Sunday, unless we have one before then. I have a surprise guest. I don't know if I should tease it. Should I tease it, Slim?
Yeah, you have to.
We're going to have Clark Moody in the studio, so it's going to be a really great rip.
Nice.
Of the Bitcoin dashboard fame, among other things, ride or die freak. So I'm very excited for that. And with all that said, stay humble, stack sats. Love you all. Thank you for being patient with me. And we're just the beginning with Dispatch, Bitcoin Park, Bitcoin TV, and everything else that we're doing. The Beef Initiative, Tennessee Beef Initiative. Let's fucking go. Love you all. Peace.